before I kick off the panel, just to say a couple of things about why we thought we want to spend a little bit of time with you all on AI and education. At Prosus, as you might have heard us say now a couple of times, we invest in different sectors. One of the big ones is EdTech, basically education technology companies. There's about 12 of them. And this is a space that we've been very excited about for some time because we believe here technology can play an important role into improving the way people learn all around the world. And so in that work, we have had the privilege of working with leaders in some of the companies and others that are trying to basically change how we learn using technology. And we thought to invite three people on, to basically have that discussion with us today. And I want to quickly maybe just introduce them or at least say who they are, and then I'll let them introduce them and say how they're using AI in their company. So first, we have Yeva Hyusan, who's the founder and CEO of SoloLearn. Welcome, Yeva. We also have Bill Salak, the CTO of Brainly, and Clinton from Duolingo, who heads up the AI work at Duolingo. And I think between the three of you, we're close to representing about a billion learners that you each serve through your company. So that's quite an interesting, I think, number. And each of you has thought about how you bring AI into your products in different ways. So I'd love maybe for you to maybe quickly introduce yourself, what you and the company have been looking at, and maybe what you're most excited about in terms of the one or two AI use cases you've been spending time on recently. So maybe, Yeva, can I ask you to start?
Yes, sure. So thanks for having me. Really exciting. So we're SoloLearn. We are the most engaging platform to learn to code. We're mobile-first, bite-sized, practice-heavy, with a strong community that kind of supports you whenever you get stuck. A top-up on Google Play and App Store, over 30 million registered users around the globe. Mostly organic growth, so that's what SoloLearn is. And in the last year and a half, we have been experimenting with AI, kind of, you know, just trying to understand how AI improves learning experience in general, because as a company, we're very much focused on experience, you know, how you teach, learning science at the core of everything we do. And we have productionized, you know, an AI assistant. We have tested a couple of things that haven't worked and we discontinued them. And a very exciting project we're working on now. And I think that's like very much where the EdTech, like the disruption in EdTech will happen. Like if you look at what has happened in EdTech in the last 10 years, the biggest focus has been on content generation. So we have generated, you know, tons of video lessons on any topic out there. Where EdTech hasn't been super efficient, like other than like a couple of companies, you know, just investing in the space, is basically, you know, just replicating a great classroom experience online. And when you think about, you know, just all the promise of AI out there, which is, you know, an AI tutor for all of us, you know, like personalized learning, you know, like playground where you can test any skill, you know, on the go, or, you know, AI bots that can teach us to be more, you know, socially and emotionally intelligent. Those are all components of, like, the great components of great teaching and great classrooms. And I feel that's where kind of, you know, just teaching AI how to teach is a very like under, you know, like overlooked area in a way. And by just, you know, kind of, you know, just investing in it. And that's a project I'll talk more about, but that's like a very exciting project we've recently started, basically training the models, not only to produce content, but also to produce it in a format that actually teaches. So super excited about that. It's not live yet, but we're seeing very good early results. And I'm going to stop here. So.
Fantastic. Yeah, we're definitely going to spend a little bit of time going a little bit deeper on that in a second. Yeah, but thanks for the introduction and thanks for joining us today. Maybe I can quickly hand it over to you, Bill, and say a little bit about, you know, what you do at Brainly, what the product is, and what are some of the use cases that you've been working on recently.
Sure, absolutely. So Brainly is a community learning platform. You can think of us as the world's largest study group. We have hundreds of millions of learners that come to us every month to get help. We have an extensive knowledge base that covers all school subjects and grades. All of this is very sophisticated technology. It's a platform that helps learners get unstuck when they need help. We integrate AI into that experience. We also integrate community. So it's learners helping learners. AI is there to assist when needed. And our goal is to give learners high quality explanations to the questions that they're struggling with. So this is schoolwork, but we're helping learners outside of school. Our goal, or the thing that's driving us right now, and where we see integration in AI and sort of where our biggest technology investments are going right now, is all around this concept of giving the explanations that your teacher would have given. So we don't just think about giving an explanation or giving an answer, but we think about what are the qualities of an explanation or an answer that is most suitable for this particular learner? Like, what is the vocabulary being used in their classroom? What are the concepts that they've been exposed to, so that when we give them an explanation, it actually serves their needs? It's not that we're introducing new words they've never heard before or concepts that they haven't learned yet, but we're really trying to get as close to the classroom as we can to provide that level of personalization that you get from your teacher who's giving you a one-on-one, you know, sort of tutoring session, so to speak. There's a lot going on in our platform to be able to make this happen, but all of the features, all the things that we work on are really around this particular goal.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And you know, you and the team were, you know, some of the earliest adopters, you know, in the group, and sort of trying to embrace how AI could, I think, help you in that North Star. And I think we'll talk about this hopefully in a bit as well, but you've certainly helped us understand what the high quality aspirations are that you also put yourself and the AI and the community to when it comes to providing the right answer, and when you know how you think about evaluating answers, whether they come from your subject matter experts or AI. And it isn't just a correct answer, but it needs to basically be as good as you described as the teacher needs to be. So we'll go deeper into that in a second. Clinton, so thank you for joining us from Duolingo. Maybe the same question to you, and also maybe you can share a little bit, well, you know, how you spend your days at Duolingo. What are the key use cases that you and the team have been, you know, spending time on when it comes to using AI and giving a better user experience for the Duolingo learners?
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to be here. Thanks for the invitation. So I'm Clinton Bicknell, Duolingo's head of AI. Duolingo, you know, primarily we have a language learning product, to make sure everyone's aware of that. We are also recently expanding to some other subjects like math and music. Primarily most of our AI is happening in the language learning space. We've been using AI since close to the beginning of Duolingo, like a decade ago, largely for personalization related issues, right? Trying to figure out what are the right exercises for this given learner at this given time. I think maybe most relevant to today, we, you know, most recently, some of the cool new things that we've started doing with large language models, the latest generation of them, include one big area is a lot of interactive kinds of features, right? So being able to like have a conversation in a language that you're learning is something that the technology just wasn't there to support before. Now we are building various features where you can have different types of conversations. There's a lot of interesting problems that come up there in terms of how to make that actually a compelling feature for learners who are wanting sort of a fun bite-sized experience, who are maybe a bit less like self-directed. We are also doing some work in the explanation space. So interesting to hear what Bill was talking about there. Definitely some connections because, you know, now we can actually give people explanations of if they get something wrong, you know, why was that wrong? They are, you know, mostly right. but there's a lot of optimization we're still doing there. And then we are also, you know, using large language models quite a bit, echoing back to something that Yeva was talking about in terms of thinking about how to automatically, you know, generate parts of the curriculum or figure out, you know, how to teach a particular concept to a given learner. And I certainly would echo what she was saying there, that, you know, generating content as content is easy. Generating content that teaches well is a very different problem that large language models don't know how to do out of the box, except in kind of obvious common sense ways. So yeah, a lot of other interesting AI work happening, but I think maybe I'll focus on those for today.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I remember, you know, in my days when I was doing my PhD at Carnegie Mellon, I think that was when Duolingo was born. And at that time, there's, you know, some of the early ML work was taking place there. So it's not really surprising to hear you have that in your DNA, it sounds like. Now, you might have seen that the theme of the event today is LLMs in production. And, you know, there's a lot of builders out here joining today, listening to the panel, and various speakers have shared very sort of, you know, things that have brought a little bit of realism back into the discussion. You know, agents suck, for example, or how hard it is to do evals and so on. And for all of the promise and so on that we, of course, think about when it comes to AI and being applied in education, I'd love to also ask you, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned, lessons learned, maybe where you had expectations on AI, moving some important, you know, metrics that you've been looking at when it comes to learners and the way they use your product that weren't exactly met, or other sort of, I guess, you know, because many of you are early movers in this space, other, you know, wisdom you've gained in the last 18 months as you sort of thought about, or maybe even before, but thought about building this next generation of ML models into learning. Maybe Bill, you have some thoughts on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the audience should know, Paul, that you pulled me into this pretty early. Like I think you were the one who brought OpenAI's new GPT models to me and said, hey, you got to look at this. And I can say, until you showed me what you guys were working on, you know, we had dabbled in the space and I was quite skeptical. So when you ask the question, like, what disappointed us or what didn't quite live up to our expectations, like I came from a place of very low expectations. And I think you were consistently like pushing my boundaries and showing me like, oh no, this can actually work. But I think what we learned, I think like the wisdom here that's most important to take away and certainly has served us well, is that if you're relying on the LLM as a fact generation engine, or you're looking at it as a body of knowledge, like that's where you're going to find disappointment. Where we find the biggest successes is in using to synthesize or produce an explanation or text or an output that is informed by something we're able to give it. So we put it on various rails, right? We put it on we put it down a path by using augmented prompts, or we feed it information and we basically ask it to synthesize this information into a more productive or human-like response. And I think it does really well at that. Where you give it space to go off the rails, where you give it space to kind of figure things out, I think that's where you're going to find disappointment. It's also the least competitive. So think about your data, think about what you know about the problem that you're trying to solve as your competitive advantage in the market space. Anytime you rely upon the LLM to sort of do what everybody else can do with it without augmenting it with your special sauce, I think you're sort of competing at the lowest common denominator, and you're not going to have much success with that. That can surface in a number of ways, right? Not just facts, but just in producing responses that are sort of generic and not necessarily helpful in a personalized use case.
Thanks for sharing that. Maybe a follow-up question just to before we go to Clinton and Yeva. How do you address this, right? Because you talked about hundreds of millions of learners. You do have this in your product. You do have, you know, these basically, it's called false positives or mistakes, misleading answers and so on that wouldn't live up to your standard. How do you deal with that at Brainly?
So, you know, with a healthy dose of skepticism that we entered this in, we really started by putting the features that we created in serious constraints. So we didn't ask it to generate responses to questions or explanations to questions. We started with something simple like, here, we have an answer to a question, but it's not serving our learner. And the learner, well, let's give the learner the ability to have this explanation reframed. So we added a simple feature like simplify this explanation or explain this in more detail, right? So now we have the context, we have the facts, we're comfortable with that, but we're able to modify the use case, the user's able to modify the use case to serve their need. Only later did we get into retrieval augmented generation use cases, only after we felt comfortable with sort of those simpler things that were more constrained. But the rack stuff really expanded a new area. And then when getting directly to your question, you know, the more you know about your learners, the more you know about their behavior patterns and their curriculum and their content. And it should be, I should be clear, we don't teach, we don't own the curriculum at Brantley. We are not the ones who have generated the curriculum. We are literally a tool for any school system, any curriculum. So when learners are asking us questions, we are trying to learn what they're learning. We're trying to figure out which cohort of learners looks like them. What's the content they're most likely to visit? What are the patterns in our knowledge base that, that we can apply to them to then be able to augment the LLM generated output? So it is about understanding your audience. It's about understanding their behavioral patterns and the content that they're going to be traversing now and in the future, and then augmenting those prompts. That's a very, very difficult thing to do. But I like to simplify it for my stakeholders by saying, oh yeah, no, this is the same thing you see on Netflix and YouTube. This is just, you know, commonplace stuff. It's actually quite difficult.
I would definitely agree. It's brave to simplify it at the risk of then being told to just do it fast and everywhere. But thanks for sharing that. Yeva, maybe the same question to you. So, you know, I think we worked together for some time, and I think we're excited.
So you brought us into the space too. So yeah.
So, but at the same time, we learned some things along the way. But I'm also curious how you see that now as you're shaping the direction of the company, or if you look back the last 18 months, what are some of those lessons where you said, hey, these are expectations I had that maybe didn't sort of turn out to be exactly as matched, and how you use that information as you decide what you do next?
Yeah, I like to echo whatever Bill said, because I think, like, we started with, you know, let's just do something, you know, everyone is talking about AI, let's get into the space. And what we've learned is, like, exactly the same, you know, because you're not going to be differentiated if you build just another assistant, you know. It will be somewhat helpful, probably. It will solve some problems, but it's not going to be, you know, a core, like, basically a core part of your product. And what we think we do best, and, like, with a lot of room for improvement, is we teach. And we started the company, you know, with, like, can you make hard things easy to understand? So that was the big premise. And the content work we're doing right now is exactly focused on that. And the exciting part of it is that we have actual teachers who kind of, you know, just provide feedback, and we train the system based on the teacher feedback. Because we have learned that that's the part that is missing. Because, yeah, AI is great, you know, to produce, like, a lot of information, you know, just in, like, the factual information, as Bill put it, but then it's not great in kind of putting it in a way that students actually understand. So we started with very small pieces of our bite-sized content, you know, just the theory part first, then we moved to, like, simple practice exercises, and the deeper we go, basically, I think that's where, like, we can make some difference in automating what we know about how people learn.
Cool. Yeah, I think that some of those lessons were hard learned. I remember also when we were actually excited about some of the feedback we did with the small cohort, we did the math on the cost and we said, wait a second, we can't really scale this up. And so I discussed with the team how we could train our own model, and eventually we did, to kind of make sure it was also cost effective. I think that comes back to one of the themes we started with. You know, at our scale, at, you know, your scale, this becomes a serious consideration. So,
Totally. But that feature that we built together is kind of loved one. Like, it's not a core feature, but it's very much used. So it explains the coding errors in the human language. So it makes it easier for students to understand. So that one is still in production, and it kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely gets to the point of making complex things easier to learn.
Right? Easy to understand, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So Clinton, you know, given that Duolingo is also, you know, in your DNA, how do you look back at some of the lessons you learned in, you know, jumping into some of these ML applications and things that maybe didn't turn out quite as you expected, either on the metrics or on other ways to kind of bring this into users at your scale?
Yeah. Great question. So yeah, I think I would echo some of the stuff first that Bill and Eva were talking about. One thing, though, maybe turning this into slightly more of a discussion, I took some of what Bill and Yeva was saying to kind of be opposites, actually. If I was following correctly, I think Bill was, one of the points he was making was that getting AI models to generate the underlying facts can be very hard to get them to do it right. Instead, you generate those based on your own internal data and then use AI to kind of package that in a nice, you know, way to present to learners. And I think Yeva was actually kind of saying the opposite, right? That use the AI models to generate the facts, and then the hard part is actually figuring out how to like present this in the most useful way to a learner. Did I follow those things correctly?
But I didn't mean that generating facts is always going to be correct and great, and you know, so you have some work to do, I think, on both ends.
Yeah, no, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so definitely we've also found that the fact part is the hardest part to get right most of the time. It's hard to make it such that that's almost always right. We definitely run into some hurdles there. Several of the solutions Bill mentioned are things we've explored. I was also going to mention in terms of what another thing that we've realized in this modern LLM world doesn't work as well is just naively running these things at scale because of cost. And I guess, Paul, you just brought that up right before. That seems very true at you know, very large scale that we operate at. Even some of the cheaper models are still, you know, cost prohibitive to run, you know, on, you know, every user response or something like that. We've actually been doing a lot of work in figuring out ways of using large language models in ways that don't scale with usage. So, for example, using them to pre-generate a lot of possible options, for example, that then you're just picking from in certain cases, or even in some interesting cases, we are doing things like using large language models to generate cheap like rules that we can apply in real time to like detect certain things, like if a person made a particular kind of grammatical error or something like that. and so that's actually been very interesting too, where we're figuring ways of using these models to generate cheap detectors that we then run without those models across everyone.
That's a very cool one. I think that's something we end up talking about as well a lot, because you know, to do good generations is expensive, right? You need these really high quality large models, but you know, selecting between the best answer, basically ranking, is a much lower effort task, right? So you can either train your own models or find other ways to have these models generate the rules. So that's nice to hear that you guys are working on that. Now, I purposely sort of wanted to dive a little bit on the learnings and the skepticism that you might have developed over time on where this might and might not work. At the same time, I think this is one of the areas where the potential for transforming the way we learn is maybe more evident than in other industries. So I would like to, you know, maybe draw on your ideas for, if you were to sort of plot the next couple of years, what are the things that you are excited about, right? So having tried and learned and maybe stumbled on some use cases, like what are the things that now, given all that, those things, you feel will really shape the industry, you know, you are building together. So I don't know who wants to go first. I see Clinton nodding, so maybe you want to start?
Sure, yeah.
Big question, so.
It is a big question. And I think there's a lot of different exciting possibilities. I mean, definitely one is just for language in particular, is just enabling people to practice and learn in a much, much more interactive way. in a much more kind of real-time adaptive way. So, you know, being able to, you know, practice ordering a coffee at a restaurant or something, right, is like a skill that you can now practice a lot of times where you just couldn't before. So there's a lot of kind of step change functions like that. I think that one problem you run into in these cases, though, which I think the community is kind of starting to grapple with now, is that it's pretty easy to just like make a chatbot, but making an actual like compelling interactive product that is based on chat is a very different goal. You know, something that people want to come back to every day and keep doing things with.
Is that an AI problem in your view, or is that something that you say we've got the AI tools for, but it requires rethinking the product experience and the way we're presenting these models into our current journey?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think definitely there's a lot of product work to do there, for sure. I'm trying to figure out like what should these experiences look like? What do we want to build? But I think then once you nail that down for a given use case, there are still a lot of interesting AI problems that come up there. So for example, one thing that we're running into Duolingo now, we have, the main like interactive chat feature that we're making is about, is basically like, a goal directed chat, like, ordering a drink at a cafe or, helping a tourist find their passport or, something like particular like goal directed conversations. Once we have that, and we want to generate things, we have several different constraints. We're trying to generate these conversations to be like with our Duolingo world characters, have their own personalities, obviously trying to, focus on particular kinds of topics that we're teaching. But also one of the really hard constraints is just keeping the language like at a level that a learner of this ability can understand. Mm-hmm. Right. And that turns out to be like one of the hardest problems. I mean, you can do a rough pass and say like, ask basically like in your prompt, you can say something like, oh, try to have this at the level of a, at the level of a third grader or something, whatever you say there. But that only gets you so far. And there's a lot of other interesting AI work to get it to actually be at the right level.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I think I think in the language space, you talk about C1, C2, these predetermined levels. That's definitely something you can't tell a language model to do or adhere to very well today. But maybe with fine tuning and so on, that becomes easier in the next couple of years.
That's right. Fine tuning is pretty helpful there. Yeah. I think one thing that's going to happen is just figuring out like what kinds of really interactive learning experiences resonate with people and are things that people are going to be coming back to, and how do you build those versus just here is an open-ended chatbot that in theory can teach you a lot of things, although it may make stuff up sometimes.
Yeah, that's a definitely exciting language learning future. So hopefully we get to see that. Bill, how do you think about, based on everything you've seen so far and the feedback you're getting from your learners, what excites you in terms of the next coming years?
My excitement's not so much driven by what I see happening with new products or new technologies. It's more about the acceptance of these technologies in new places in our lives that we haven't been readily accepting them. So when we, when we first started working with LLMs, one of the, literally like every interview that I did since OpenAI released ChatGPT, the question was, and how do people feel about having AI in the classroom? Or how do people feel about AI interacting with their children? As if, this was some version of the Terminator that was coming for their kids. I think that society in general, culture in general, is like more open and accepting and starting to get comfortable with this. So I'm really excited about the problems we can solve, because there are huge problems in education, in formal education, in the entrenched sort of systems of education that are run by governments, national governments. There are huge problems there. There's underfunding, there's understaffing, there's lack of being able to have one-on-one attention with kids. We can solve those problems with these technologies. And that, to me, is the most exciting opportunity in front of us.
Yeah, that that is hard to disagree with. So I hope you guys can be part of that solution. Yeva, same question for you.
There is a lot of exciting stuff. Like when you imagine where you can go, as a result of kind of whatever was made available to us, the prospects are like great and awesome. I think it will take some time to get there. Whatever we work on and we talked about it, it's not perfect and it will need a lot of tuning, fine tuning, just a lot of kind of trial and error and learning on the go. yeah, like we have no other choice because we need to be learning on the go. We need to be upskilling, you know, all the time just to stay competitive and to be relevant. And so that's the path. Like the question is how fast we get there and yeah, and how fast we figure things out.
Yeah, that's, hearing it from the three of you, I mean, you've gone through, I think, a healthy amount of skepticism to some excitement to, you know, back, and I still hear some optimism in what you're describing in the future. So I guess as a father of two young children, I hope by the time they have to learn many languages, code, or any other homework help, you guys have built everything they need to do this better and more effectively. So thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate the time. I know it's late for some of you early in other parts of the world. So thanks for joining and sharing your wisdom.